Hello, everyone. Dan Delman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. You're listening to 101.5 on your FM dial. Thank you so very much for tuning in today. We enjoy having you, and we'll try to inform you, entertain you, and who knows, during the next 27 minutes, we may even amuse you. Our first topic today is melting glaciers, specifically Himalayan glaciers in Asia that are melting at an exceptional rate. Climate change is threatening the water supply for millions of people who especially depend upon the water from these glaciers for agriculture in South Asia. The glaciers in the Himalayas are melting at such a rapid rate because of global warming, as I said, and they threaten the water supply of people in Bangladesh, in India, in Pakistan, and in the smaller countries along the southern edge of the Himalayas. The Himalayan glaciers are shrinking far more rapidly than glaciers in other parts of the world. The ice is now being lost from these glaciers at a rate that is at least 10 times higher than the average rate over the past centuries. This acceleration in the rate of loss has only emerged within the last few decades, and it coincides with human-induced climate change. Researchers have calculated that Himalayan glaciers have lost roughly 40% of their area in the past several hundred years. The glaciers are a critical source of water for about 250 million people in the mountains, and well over a billion and a half people who live in the river valleys below. They draw the water that they need for agriculture from the Ganges River, the Indus River, and the Brahmaputra rivers, the great rivers of South Asia. The Himalayan mountain range is home to the world's third largest amount of glacier ice. That's after Antarctica and the Arctic. The region often is referred to as the world's third pole because of the huge store of ice. And it is the home to Mount Everest, K2, and other iconic mountain peaks. Though the mountains are tens of millions of years old, their glaciers are extremely sensitive to the changing climate. And since the 1970s, when global warming first set in, these huge masses of ice have steadily thinned and retreated. Man-made climate change, you know, is caused by the burning of fossil fuels, such as gas and coal and oil, which release greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide and methane into the atmosphere. This extra CO2 causes temperatures of the atmosphere and the oceans to rise to levels that scientists say can't be explained by natural causes. We must act urgently to reduce and to mitigate the impact of man-made climate, according to the researchers who are studying this problem at the present time. Our second topic for today's program is quite current, and it tends to remain current with each national election that we have. The topic is polling trouble. That is, polls are struggling to capture an accurate picture of the way Americans vote. And there are a number of questions that they're trying to answer. First of all, do polls have credibility? And secondly, what happened in the 2016 presidential election and in the 2020 presidential election? Why were the polls so far off? And do faulty polls always tilt leftward in terms of voters' preferences? And just how can polling problems be fixed? And so these are the questions we'll try to answer in the next few minutes. With respect to the credibility of polls, polls have been losing credibility in three of the last four national election cycles, in 2014, in 2016, 2018, and 2020. Polls significantly overestimated the performance of Democratic candidates. The polls' poor performance exposed the reality that polling companies face far more challenges today in getting a representative cross-section of people to respond. In an age of ubiquitous cell phones and caller ID, the Pew Research Center estimates that only 6% of the people polling firms, the ones that polling firms call, do they respond. Only 6% of the people respond. And that's down from nearly 50% in the 1970s and the 1980s. With many Americans abandoning landline phones, pollsters have been forced to call cell phones. But federal law forbids them from making automated calls to those phones. And this makes polling more expensive. People who still respond to polls are generally older, whiter, more educated, and more likely to be female than the voting public. Pollsters try to correct for that skew, but the industry nonetheless faced a major reckoning after the 2016 presidential election. Well, you may remember what happened that year. Most polls predicted that Hillary Clinton would be elected president. In the final days, aggregate polls predicted that she would win the popular vote by 3 percentage points. That turned out to be only 1 point off, well within the stated margin of error. But on a state level, the polls missed a last-minute surge in support for the person running against her, Donald Trump. And in his efforts in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Pennsylvania, his narrow victories gave him the Electoral College and the presidency. After that black eye, even the American Association for Public Opinion Research, or APOR, released guidelines to reduce polling bias, including more heavily weighing white voters without college degrees. In the 2020 election, The results were even less accurate. And people wondered why the polls were so far off. Well, Americans elected Biden with 51% of the vote versus his opponents, 46%. A historically substantial margin. But polls had predicted an even greater victory margin for Biden and a blue wave of Democrats in the House, which failed to materialize. An APOR postmortem, which was published in July, found that polls overstated Biden's victory margin by almost 4 percentage points in the final weeks before Election Day, the industry's worst performance in 40 years of polling. Experts aren't sure what skewed the numbers the most, but Vanderbilt University political scientist Joshua Clinton, no relation to the former candidate, called 2020 pretty much a perfect storm for pre-election polling. First of all, the pandemic changed campaigning and voting norms. One theory is that left of center voters were more likely to follow social distancing guidelines and to stay home, making them more reachable by phone and thus overrepresented in the polls. Secondly, turnout was the highest in more than 100 years, with newly energized voters possibly weakening the pollsters' likely voters' predictions. Finally, candidate Trump repeatedly told his supporters not to trust the polls that showed him trailing, and this perhaps influenced them to ignore calls from pollsters. Well, do faulty polls always tilt toward the left, that is, toward a voter group that is more leftward leaning? And the researchers to this date have found out that they do not. In 2012, some polls, including the Gallup poll, predicted a narrow victory for Mitt Romney. Instead, Barack Obama was reelected very comfortably. Last September, the RealClearPolitics.com's poll, their aggregation, suggested that Californians would vote against recalling Governor Gavin Newsom by a 14-point margin. But he survived by nearly double that. Though polls use enthusiasm to gauge how likely it is that a respondent will vote, California made participation extremely easy, mailing all 22 million of the state's registered voters postage-paid mail-in ballots. As Democratic strategist Gary South said, "This doesn't require enthusiasm, folks." Well, just how can polling troubles be fixed? No one's entirely sure, but polling organizations have begun making major changes. 538.com has stopped privileging live caller only polls, and no longer are more accurate polls than employ a mix of methods to reach voters, including online, text-based, and interactive voice response systems. polls are changing what they ask people. The Pew Research Center has added screening questions which are designed to measure the respondents' trust in institutions, such as whether they volunteer, and weigh the mistrustful more heavily, since they're more likely to be underrepresented. And finally, the answer to the question, can we really trust polls anymore? On balance, the answer seems to be yes, though maybe we should expect a little less of them. All polls have a margin of error, and in close elections, that margin can result in wrong predictions. If a candidate gets, say, 51% of the vote instead of the predicted 49 on election day, headlines deem that it was an upset, even if that 2-point difference is within the estimated margin of error. Because polls are snapshots in time, they can be misleading, since events can change how people vote and right up to the last minute when they walk into the polling booth. In 2016, FBI Director James Comey's announcement that he was looking into Hillary Clinton's emails 11 days before the election apparently swung many undecided voters to candidate Trump. Still, even though trust in polls has declined, they'll continue to get a lot of attention as a useful, if imperfect, measure of public opinion. Time now for Innovations of the Week, or at least one innovation. We'll see how much time there is left in today's program. I wanted to tell you, though, that new technology makes flying a helicopter as easy as driving a car or playing a video game. Using just two iPads and a joystick, you can take off, turn, swivel, accelerate, climb, dive, hover, and land with a tap of the screen or a twist of the stick. Now, mind you, I'm not a pilot, but the software system, Flight OS, call them Skyrise, add so much automation to the operation that novices can master the skill very easily. But the Skyrise company wants to simplify even those processes. Its system is designed for helicopters, jet planes, and in the future, flying cars. And now that we're on the subject of cars, I wanted to tell you a bit about self-driving delivery. Someday in the near future, your pizza order might arrive at the door, courtesy of a robot, specifically the R2 delivery system, which is an electric self-driving vehicle developed by the San Francisco-based Nuro company. It's about the size of a golf cart. And the R2 is equipped with 360-degree cameras, short and long-range radar, and ultrasonic sensors. And it's capable of speeds up to 25 miles per hour. The vehicle is designed to solve a long-time problem for shippers. last mile delivery. That is, the point at which goods are brought from the distribution centers to their ultimate destination, which tends to be the most logistically tricky, because individual items need to be going to different addresses, which can involve a lot of trucks and drivers and stops. FedEx and Kroger in Houston are now testing the R2 in real-life traffic conditions. They're also on the road in Phoenix and in Mountain View, California. And if you are very alert, you will notice this little vehicle in a commercial for Domino's Pizza. We're going to introduce a new category in the program today. It's called Food for Thought. And that is, try to give you a heads up as to what we will be covering in programs in the near future, maybe in the next two and three programs ahead. And one of the topics is going to be China's military buildup. China is testing hypersonic missiles and building new nuclear missile silos. Just what are China's goals? So we'll be looking at what China has been doing, why they're doing it now. We're going to explore what China's weaknesses are compared to our military, and look at our military edge over the Chinese military. That's one thing we'll be doing. Another thing that I thought might interest you in the near future, I usually have a segment from time to time about people who write letters into the Smithsonian Institution asking about scientific questions for the scientists there to answer. And several of the questions that we're going to be looking at in the reasonably near future are, number one, how does wildfire smoke affect the movement and communication of bees? And then the scientists at the Smithsonian Institution will be faced with this question: what is the earliest record of humans thinking about an afterlife? And finally, what is the rarest item in the Smithsonian collection, which is vast? And just how was this item obtained? And then a very interesting topic entitled The War in Orbit. A recent Russian anti-satellite test created a dangerous cloud of space debris and raised the risk of war in space. So we'll look at this test that Russia just made, and why they did it, and what is vulnerable in outer space, and we'll look at a chain reaction scenario. These are all topics that you can look forward to over the next few weeks. And now, with that said, it's time for me to think about leaving you for today. Thank you so very much for tuning in. Enjoyed having you. I want you to take care now. Be careful out there. And be sure to be kind to others. They'll be surprised. And maybe we can be more kind to each other. Well, my friend Willie Nelson is here. And Willie and I are going to head down the road again, as we do after every program, looking for more items to include, to entertain, inform, and to amuse you. And a little of this, a little of that. Hit it, Willie. Take us down the road.